The Takeaway is supported by TechServe, offering Mac computer repairs for screen fixes, liquid damage, backup services, hard drive issues, and other problems. More information at TechServe.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. I remember it like it was yesterday. Jimmy Carter conceding defeat at the hands of Ronald Reagan.
I love this country. I love the people of this nation. Finally, let me say that I am disappointed tonight, but I have not lost either love. Thank you very much.
The polls were still open on the West Coast where the sun was still up, and I was driving to cover the Senate race of Republican Bob Packwood in Oregon. Carter's concession was a shock. His defeat was not a shock, really. I suppose I, like many American voters, had grown tired of the hostage crisis, Carter's inability to deal with it. There was the stalled stock market, which seemed to symbolize the nation's economic stagnation. But still, it all felt like it was over before it had even begun. One term, and Carter was gone.
It's clear that the true problems of our nation are much deeper, deeper than gasoline lines or energy shortages, deeper even than inflation or recession. And I realize more than ever that as president, I need your help.
Years later, I recall that early moment in my career as a journalist on stage with the former president, and I awkwardly slipped up in front of a packed theater in New York City, confusing Carter's second campaign with a second term of office.
So, President Carter, to begin, I covered your administration, the second term, and also the Carter Center.
Of course, Jimmy Carter, sharp as a tack, even at age 90, wasn't going to let that one go by.
Well, first of all, the Carter Center was founded when I was retired from the White House inadvertently. I didn't have a second term, by the way.
Right, and, right, that's true. To hear you speak, I suspect, without being partisan, I'm not the only one in the world who's dreamed of a Carter second term, but it's your second campaign that I covered.
Now, the enthusiasm of that predictably lefty New York crowd got me thinking. What would have been the course of history if Jimmy Carter had won instead of Ronald Reagan in 1980? I suppose you would have had to erase the Iranian Revolution and the hostage crisis to accomplish it, but maybe not. This hour on I Kid You Not, Carter's 91st birthday, no idle wishful thinking, just some deep exploration of a turning point in history that looks much more significant today than it felt back in 1980. From the Middle East, the Cold War, America's relationship with dictators in the Philippines, Haiti, to China and Africa, all would have been very different. We'll look at the changes in the political parties, our national economy, and how the Carter style actually managed to make a brief appearance into popular culture for a time. We'll discover this hour that with the advantage of hindsight, a second Carter term would have changed and stalled trends and events that are surprising, complicated to sort out, but we will give it a shot. And hopefully we will not get stuck in a Bee Gees, Doobie Brothers, late 70s musical wormhole. Oh, I'm glad that's over anyway.
Carter, early in his administration, said the Democratic Party is an albatross around my neck.
Historian Douglas Brinkley has thought a lot about what might have been. He's a professor of history at Rice University and author of the Jimmy Carter biography, The Unfinished Presidency, Jimmy Carter's Journey Beyond the White House. In many ways, Brinkley says that the evolution of the Democratic Party to a more centrist and conservative institution did not begin with Bill Clinton and his Democratic Leadership Council of the 1990s, but with Jimmy Carter and his policies that made an enemy out of Teddy Kennedy and other Democratic legends of the 1960s and 70s.
You know, we used to say, or historians sometimes say, Carter was the most conservative Democrat since Grover Cleveland. He was not really a classic liberal, but the fact is that Carterism started representing the term malaise. So the Republicans ran against Jimmy Carter. You know, Walter Mondale got the Democratic nomination in 84. He had been Carter's vice president, and they just beat him up as being warmed over Jimmy Carter, and Mondale loses. And liberalism starts taking a hit to the point that the Democratic Party under Bill Clinton has to reinvent themselves as New Democrats, which is shorthand for being not Jimmy Carter Democrats.
So given what we know today about Ronald Reagan's health at that time, it's possible that if he had not won in 1980, he might not have wanted to or been able to run in 1984. So not only would there have been no Reagan Revolution, there may not have been a Ronald Reagan in the White House.
Keep in mind, I mean, I'll give you an example of a difference between Carter and Reagan. They're very different people stylistically and personality. But Jimmy Carter would have embraced the problem of AIDS, which is so symbiotic with the 1980s. And, you know, he had a great passion, Carter, for Africa and for, global health issues and the like, that he would have probably risen to the challenge of the AIDS epidemic, where Reagan kind of swept it under the rug.
We don't want to covet a Carter second term because it's much too complicated to imagine all of the historical, dynamics that are at work. But if we can look back with hindsight, what happened in 1980 certainly feels a lot more like a turning point than an inevitability. So much really changed that set in motion so much of what we see today, everything from national security to the way we approach energy policy.
You're correct, and it's the seismic election in 1980. I teach, class on the presidency. I talk often about 1932 and FDR's getting elected. From 32 all the way to 1980, the American people believed that government was there to help you. FDR with his New Deal programs, or the Manhattan Project, winning of World War II. Truman creates the CIA and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and promotes all sorts of domestic government programs. Dwight Eisenhower built the interstate highway system and the St. Lawrence Seaway, and Kennedy brings the country on the moon challenge of the Apollo project, and Lyndon Johnson with Medicaid and Medicare and all the great society, and Carter creating Department of Energy and FEMA and growing government. And then Reagan comes in. And Reagan is the revolution by 1980, because he's saying the role of government needs to be shrunk. We're going to roll back Carterism and roll back the Great Society.
Can you imagine one thing in a Carter second term that would have certainly happened that is impossible to imagine under Ronald Reagan, or even Bill Clinton, the Democrat that followed Reagan?
Jimmy Carter was a true environmentalist. He even is as an ex-president. And as his push to do alternative energy, I think, would have defined a lot of his second term. And so we may have been at a different place right now in that regard. Instead, Reagan put in James Watt, the most retrograde interior secretary in American history, and started trying to just open up the public lands, mine, 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 and drill, drill, drill. So there's a very stark difference there between Carter and Reagan, and alas, some missed opportunities for the environmental movement once Carter's out of the picture.
Would Bill Clinton have been elected president if Carter had had a second term?
I don't know. Bill Clinton is such a superstar, meaning so fast on his feet. There's probably no holding Bill Clinton back. He would have found a way to the White House if possible, because his ambition was so large.
Douglas Brinkley is a professor of history at Rice University and a biographer of Jimmy Carter. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Carter loss in 1980 began the Reagan Revolution. But how much of that was already underway in the deregulation policies of Carter, the market-based approaches that stepped away from the classic Great Society programs of the New Deal LBJ era? What if Ronald Reagan had lost in 1980? Conservative Michael Barone, a writer at the Washington Examiner and the American Enterprise Institute, says that Reagan and Carter were not as distinct as the popular mythology would have us believe. But there is something that would certainly not have happened with a Carter victory in 1980.
Well, I think what would vanish from the landscape would be the Reagan tax cuts, the attempt by the president to hold down the domestic spending, not as successful as he wanted to be, but that would have vanished. As your question suggests, though, there are some continuities. When we look back on history, we see many continuities in American government that weren't so apparent when we were listening to campaign rhetoric, which inevitably stresses the differences between candidates and parties. And some of the policies President Reagan is rightly, I think, given credit for, had their initiation in policies of President Jimmy Carter. President Carter supported, actively supported, deregulation of transportation, of the railroads, freight rail, airlines, and trucking. That was a major step forward, in my opinion, general opinion of economists, that deregulation of transportation communication was carried farther in the Reagan administration. But this was something that had bipartisan support and the active support of both President Carter and President Reagan. The defense buildup in the Cold War, again, President Reagan gets much credit, or if you will, blame for this, and indeed did vastly increase defense spending and initiate things like the Strategic Defense Initiative. But President Carter also made a significant change in defense policy and defense spending in response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in December 1979. He said that really changed his ideas about what he had earlier called the inordinate fear of communism. And he initiated a serious change in defense policy implemented by his defense secretary, Harold Brown, very capable man, well-respected by both parties. So that move in American policy happened in 1980, but it was not initiated by the election, but by the actions of President Carter.
Would you say that if Carter had been reelected, that this continuity suggests that a conservative revolution would have taken place just without the symbolic leader of it all, Ronald Reagan?
Well, I don't think a conservative revolution would have taken place to the extent it did under President Reagan. And I think it overstates things to call it a resolution. And I think President Reagan provided some distinctive moves in leadership, like the support of the Strategic Defense Initiative, which no other president conceivable of either party probably would have done. I do think that President Carter's administration and its support of deregulation was part of a move where we recognized as a people, and really on a bipartisan basis, that moving towards more and more government and less a way of market economics was not inevitably a progressive move, did not inevitably serve people, that markets could do things and operate more effectively than many economists, many political leaders of previous decades had thought. And I think President Carter, to some significant extent, moved that process along in that direction. I don't think he would have moved it as far or in exactly the ways that President Reagan did.
Michael Barone is a writer at the Washington Examiner and at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
How would history be changed if Jimmy Carter had had a second term in 1980? All this hour on The Takeaway. Stay with us.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
President Ronald Reagan said that in 1987 to the leader of the Soviet Union while standing in front of the Berlin Wall. Reagan won the Cold War. That's the popular mythology. It was provocative statements like bring down the wall and aggressive policies such as the Reagan-Pentagon buildup, the placement of short-range nuclear missiles in Europe, and the Strategic Defense Initiative, the so-called Star Wars anti-missile program that caused the Soviet Union to collapse. But curiously, those close to Jimmy Carter back in the 70s during the Carter first term recall a USSR already back on its heels, overwhelmed in Afghanistan and visibly crumbling. That's the memory of then-young White House press aide Randy Lewis.
There was very little question that the Soviet Union was going to collapse. Socialist systems, communist systems always fail. And I think everybody saw that coming.
We'll hear more from Randy Lewis a little later this hour. But would the Cold War have been prolonged by a Carter second term? That's the question we're asking today on the former president's 91st birthday. Would Jimmy Carter's approach to defense policy have given the Soviets a reprieve? Tim Weiner, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and the National Book Award winner for his definitive history of the CIA, seriously doubts it.
The Soviet Union collapsed because communism is a rotten economic system, not because of any one thing that the United States did. But Carter was certainly working full-time to weaken the Soviet Union. And what Reagan did, which is something that Carter would not have done, is to double the Pentagon's budget and quadruple the CIA's covert actions and try and run proxy wars all over the world to fight fire with fire, that is, to actually make war on communist and socialist forces.
What about the human rights legacy, the supposed human rights legacy of Carter being very aggressive against the dictators that we had supported during the Cold War?
Interestingly, Carter's covert action policies at the CIA, as well as his diplomacy, were both driven by human rights. I think apartheid would have come to an end quicker than it did.
Really?
I think that the proxy wars that the United States fought in Central America, in El Salvador, in Honduras, in Guatemala, against the left-wing Sandinistas of Nicaragua would probably not have happened. Supporting badly run guerrilla armies was not Carter's style. It was certainly the style of Ronald Reagan and his CIA director, Bill Casey.
Would he have committed the Pentagon to changing this ineptitude regarding special forces? Would he have started an initiative that brought us to basically where we are today on special forces, or was that something for Reagan to do?
Carter's team to steal a phrase, a team of rivals, where you had a Secretary of Defense who was interested in building a new generation of modern weapons, but for tens of billions of dollars less than the Pentagon requested. You had a Secretary of State who was primarily interested in human rights as an organizing principle. You had National Security Advisor Brzezinski, who was interested in bleeding the Soviet bear. And on top of this, you had Jimmy Carter, who listened to every viewpoint to the point of exhaustion. There is no question that the following things would not have happened had Carter won a second term and Reagan never been elected. We would not have spent well over $1 trillion on military weapons that were useless because they were designed for a nuclear World War III. We would not have gotten involved in the proxy wars of Central America, where we were supporting ragtag bands of guerrillas trying to overthrow an elected government. We would not have reacted to the chaos in the Middle East by becoming involved to the extent that hundreds of Marines were murdered by Hezbollah in an explosion at the Beirut airport. Nor would we have tacitly backed the massacres of refugees, mostly women and children, in the camps in the slums of Beirut at Shabran Shatila, which turned whatever segment of the Arab world that was still pro-American against the United States.
The neoconservative movement is said to have begun in the Reagan term, which suggests that there were these neocons out there waiting to take power. Do you think a Carter second term would have stalled the national security implications of some of these folks who were part of the Reagan administration, who were keen to turn things around, wouldn't have gotten a chance, and that would have changed the course of history?
Well, the movement you're speaking of actually began in the Nixon administration. People like Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and Supreme Court Justice Bill Rehnquist, they were young. They were in their 30s, early 40s. And once the Republicans were back in power, they became very influential voices in the Republican establishment. People speak of an invisible bridge. It's the title of a book by the historian Rick Perlstein that somehow helped catapult these people into power.
Would a Carter second term have stalled or stopped it, or was the momentum too great?
yes, these folks would have been in think tanks instead of running multi-billion dollar programs and rising to the highest levels of American government.
Would there have been a second term scandal that would have emerged that we don't know about, that only someone like you, Tim, would?
I think in foreign affairs, not. Carter had a couple of cronies around him who were not the most ethical people you'd ever meet in your entire life. Carter had a brother, Billy, yeah, who, you know, liked to drink his lunch and caused a number of embarrassments. But nothing on the scale of Watergate, nothing on the scale of the Iran-Contra scandal, nothing on the level of the domestic spying on Americans that took place under George W. Bush. And it's pretty hard to see Jimmy Carter sending drones out to kill American citizens, much less terrorist suspects.
Or hang out with interns in back rooms at the White House.
Certainly not. That he would not have done.
Tim Weiner, thanks so much.
You bet, John.
Tim Weiner is the author of the best-selling book One Man Against the World, The Tragedy of Richard Nixon. He won the National Book Award in 2007 for his History of the CIA, Legacy of Ashes.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity, offering a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving. With brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program, performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
Would Jimmy Carter have had a chance to appoint justices to the U.S. Supreme Court in a second term? What of his impact on the judiciary and lower court appointments? Ronald Reagan ran on a platform promising to appoint the first woman to the Supreme Court, which he did, Sandra Day O'Connor. Jimmy Carter made no such promise, but he did appoint quite a few women to the federal bench, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, caught up with Linda Greenhouse, Supreme Court reporter from 1978 to 2008. He asked Greenhouse what opportunities Carter might have had in an imaginary second term.
Shirley Hufstedler was a judge on the Federal Appeals Court in California. She stepped down from that position to become Carter's Secretary of Education. And I think the general wisdom was that there was going to be a Supreme Court vacancy. Nobody knew exactly who was leaving or when, and that Judge Hufstedler would have been a very natural fit for that. And that obviously didn't happen.
Instead, in 1981, Ronald Reagan appointed Sandra Day O'Connor to the Supreme Court. She was instrumental in cutting back on affirmative action, on criminal defendants' rights. She even weighed in on Roe v. Wade.
It was quite a shock when Sandra O'Connor, in 1983, in the Akron case, the first time she had a chance to express herself on abortion, there was still a majority on the court in favor of preserving the entirety of Roe against Wade. And in this Akron case, which involved a bunch of local regulations imposed by the city of Akron, Ohio, she wrote a dissenting opinion that was very strongly anti-Roe against Wade. I won't say anti-abortion. She didn't get into her personal views on abortion, and I don't actually think she was anti-choice. But as a jurisprudential matter, she said Roe against Wade is on a collision course with itself, and so on and so on. That was really, really shook people up and really, I think, undermined the confidence of the public and the lower courts in the ability of Roe against Wade to last through the entirety of the Reagan years. It did last in weakened form, and we're still living with that today. But I think that Shirley Hufstedler would have taken quite a different view of the matter.
We can flash our imagination forward even from the Carter second term and imagine, had Carter won in 1980, there may have been no Reagan phenomenon. Now, this has all kinds of implications, and we won't even scratch the surface of most of them. But you know, if you want to say if there was no Reagan at all, then there was no Scalia. There was no Anthony Kennedy. I mean, the implications of that, from Bush v. Gore to decisions going up and down, Obamacare, things going on now, Obergefell and the gay marriage decision, are just almost too broad to wrap your head around.
Oh, yeah. It would have set things off in quite a different direction. You know, I think the singular event in the post-first term Reagan administration was the defeat of his nomination of Robert Bork in 1987. That's the seat that ultimately went to Justice Kennedy. And if you really want to play a thought experiment, it's to think, what is the constitutional world we'd be living in today had Robert Bork been sitting there all these years instead of Anthony Kennedy? Of course, he wouldn't still be sitting because he died a couple of years ago, but he definitely would have been a vote to overturn Roe against Wade. You name anything in the sort of constitutional firmament, and he would have been on the far right.
Well, Linda Greenhouse, I can't thank you enough for doing this thought experiment with us, the second Carter term that never was in the Supreme Court. Thank you so much.
It's been fun for me. Thanks, Todd.
Linda Greenhouse covered the Supreme Court for the New York Times from 1978 to 2008. Today, she is the Knight Distinguished Journalist in Residence and the Joseph Goldstein Lecturer in Law at Yale Law School.
This is The Takeaway, and all this hour we're asking, what if Jimmy Carter had been elected for a second term in 1980? Randy Lewis was a high school senior when he first met Jimmy Carter. It was December of 1974, and Carter had recently announced that he was running for president in the 1976 election. Lewis liked Carter as a new-style Democrat. He did a lot of grunt work as a low-level campaign operative until he was made a travel aide to Carter, even though he was not even a high school graduate. Lewis watched the Carter presidency take shape. He eventually landed a job in the White House press office, helping Carter's press secretary, Jody Powell. What does Lewis see as the key consequence of Carter winning a second term? That's easy. Lewis says he wouldn't have lost the best job he ever had.
I have always looked back at his presidency as really being a transitional presidency. Not a transformational presidency, but a transitional presidency. And that we were going from the world that we sort of knew in the 50s and 60s to a very different place. Obviously, the Soviets were in trouble and they were heading towards a collapse. You were seeing this rise of trouble in South America at the time. Think back to the Allende, the Argentinian crisis and so forth, where you had death squads roaming a number of countries in South America. It was just a time of great turmoil coming out of the 60s and 70s, and we were moving into sort of a new world order. And I think to an extent we were doing that domestically as well, where we were seeing the two political parties divide into very liberal and very conservative. And he was the captain who, in a sense, as president, was navigating those changes.
What do you think of Carter's style of politics as you observed it? Was his sense of integrity evident in the first term? And what do you think the impact of that integrity in a second term, what do you think that would have been on Washington and on, sort of world affairs?
Well, integrity, I would use a different phrase. I think he was a man who constantly has maintained his personal honor in every situation. And we've seen that both as president and certainly post-president. And even when you go back to when he was governor of Georgia and the way he dealt with racial issues here in the state, giving a speech on his inaugural day saying that the time for racial segregation is over. It's that level of personal honor that he brought to Washington. It's very difficult to maintain that for most people, I believe, in that Washington environment. But I think for Jimmy Carter, it was always easy to maintain. And I think that would have been would have become much more difficult during a second term. Washington is not a city that tolerates people with personal honor very well.
You worked with Carter, you know, pretty closely for someone of your age. I mean, he was something of a mentor to you.
I was 19 when I first started working for him. It was, in a sense, my first serious job out of high school. and I began working in the West Wing a month before my 21st birthday. So it ended up being my college education. But more importantly, it was the education that I got from him on how to maintain personal honor and integrity in very highly charged political environments. It was something to watch. So, yes, very, very much a mentor in terms of how to carry yourself and conduct yourself in very difficult and trying circumstances.
And what do you think having that mentor for four more years would have meant for you, aside from the fact that you would have had to deal with the backstabbing second-term Washington?
I am uncertain about that. I tend not to look back too much about what changes I should have turned on. I have generally been proud of the turns that I made on the road along the way, and it was a tremendous experience. I had a friend who went to Harvard, and he told me one time that he would trade his Harvard education for my White House education, and I told him for me that would be a terrible deal. I would never have done it.
Randy Lewis, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Randy Lewis worked for Jimmy Carter for almost 6 years on Carter's presidential campaign and in the White House press office. Lewis now runs a PR consultancy company in Atlanta, Georgia.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International, in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Jimmy Carter's approach to foreign policy to make human rights central to the U.S. relationship with its allies and rivals had real consequences. Political prisoners held by governments, in some cases for years, and in some cases victims of torture, were released as a result of the Carter insistence on human rights as a condition for receiving U.S. foreign and military aid. The release of prisoners was a personal passion of Carter's. He worked with dictators and negotiated releases directly, often writing personal letters on behalf of captives. Robert Duvall is one of those former captives. A former professional soccer player, Duvall lived in Haiti until the age of 10, then went to North America for his education. When he returned to Haiti at age 22, he was arrested. His profile as a soccer player and his pro-democracy positions branded him a rebel. He might have died there. Duvall says he owes his life to one man.
I went back to Haiti because it was my destination. My father always said that, you know, you're gonna come back to the family business and all of that. And you know what? 8 months into the country, I got arrested by Baby Doc, by Jean-Claude Duvalier. They never gave me a trial. Until today, I don't know what it was. There's a lot of hope that just went down the drain by then.
How did that hope return under Jimmy Carter?
I think that having been released, because I was at the verge of death, I was down to 90 pounds, I saw more than 180 people die in front of me in my cells. You know, at the time it was 1976, 1977. And one of the things that we had as hope was that Jimmy Carter ran on the human rights ticket. And everybody had agreed that, you know, having the president of the biggest country in the world, the richest one and the most powerful one, and the one that has most influence in the politics in Haiti, was the United States. And then having such a person come and be worried about, you know, human rights, we were right at the forefront of that hope.
The idea that that a president in Washington, so far from your prison cell, could have an impact on you to free you, and then your life becomes a completely different mission.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of impact that we don't think of presidents having.
Ever since that moment that I was released, I think my life changed. I became a different person. Sorry.
How different?
Very different. I still carry those scars. I try to make them to go away, try to go away. But my life has changed. I've never been the same. I've never had the same interest. All I care about is what I can do for others, you know, to the detriment of my immediate surroundings, including myself. And it's very hard to get out of it because I guess the scar was so profound that I still haven't really fixed it yet.
Did you ever get a chance to thank President Carter?
Oh, yeah. I had a chance to thank him many different times, you know, especially when he got much involved in Haiti after his presidency and tried to, you know, push election in Haiti. And also he invited me, you know, luckily a couple of years ago to his ranch, you know, and he had me sit next to him, you know, and we talked about a lot of things. And I try every time I speak to anybody, not just American journalists, but the whole world, I mean, any journalist, you know, that get interested in Haiti and they come and give me an opportunity to talk, I never fail to say how thankful I am. I said, anyway, for me to be here and be able to talk to you, it was thanks to Mr. Jimmy Carter and his policies that got me out and so many others out of the hell of men that we were subjected to for a long time.
Jimmy Carter only had a single term in American politics in the White House. Who do you think mm-hmm. would have been affected? How many others do you think would have lived had he had a second term, a second 4 years?
Yeah, many more. But I think that the fact that he did it, even at least once, you know, he should rest in peace, that he set the trend of human rights around the world.
What do you think Americans need to know about Jimmy Carter? Just a few weeks ago, he told all of the world and certainly Americans that he's very sick and that he probably won't survive this cancer that he mentioned that he had mm-hmm. and wanted to let everyone know that he wasn't afraid.
No.
But what do you think, from your perspective, Americans need to know about this man who didn't get a second term?
Yeah, I think they should be proud of him. I think they should be in search of his really deep-rooted beliefs as a human being. I think he always comes out for the underdog, you know? I think that this is the vision of a man that really has never faltered in his duty. He was sent, you know. I'm not a very religious person, but he was definitely sent by some forces that, you know, to make him play a role in this world, you know. And he did it fully. It's not like not enough to fight one day. It's like you fight every day. And he's always, to me, many times on the right side of history, basically.
What would you say to him today?
Thank you very much for having saved my life. And thank you for the gift you have given humanity.
Robert Duvall is president of Athletics of Haiti, executive director of the Sports Center for Hope in Haiti, and a former political prisoner.
Support for The Takeaway comes from the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway's resilience reporting is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. For more, go to rockfound.org. TIAA-CREF, a global financial company that's created to serve and built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org.
By far, President Carter's biggest foreign policy achievement was the Camp David Accords. The agreements made at the Camp David Summit in 1978 ended the dispute between Israel and Egypt. They led to the first peace treaty between Israel and the Arab world, a treaty that stands today. But that treaty may have spelled the end of Egypt's President Anwar Sadat. killed by extremists in 1981. Menachem Begin of Israel began looking for another military adventure after the treaty was signed and found one in Lebanon in 1982. But how might the Middle East look now if Carter had been able to build on all of his momentum with a second term as president? Could Sadat have survived, the invasion of Lebanon avoided? Could Carter have changed the relationship between the United States and Iran? Gary Sick was a part of all of this when he served on the National Security Council under Presidents Ford, Carter, and briefly under Reagan. He's now a senior research scholar at Columbia University, where he says these questions still carry the weight of history.
These events do have tremendous repercussions. To me, the big things that changed the Middle East in the days that followed Carter's defeat were in 1982, the Iranians shoved the Iraqis back to the border during the Iran-Iraq War, and there was a moment there when there was a possibility of these two sides making a peace agreement. Instead, the Iranians decided to go on with the war, a very bad decision on their part, and it went on for six more years, and they lost tens of thousands of young men.
And the Reagan administration backed Iraq not as a winner but as a non-loser.
There was a moment in 1982 when the Secretary General of the UN wanted to launch a peace initiative. He did launch one on his own, but he had no support from the Reagan administration. I think Jimmy Carter would have backed that, and if he had backed it, it would have given Iran an alternative to going on with the war that might have been very attractive to them. So it's very possible that the Iran-Iraq war would have ended years earlier. Nobody could guarantee that, but there would have been an effort. As it was, there was no effort. Instead, the United States backed Saddam Hussein, began feeding him intelligence information, and that was used for chemical attacks against Iran. The Iranians have never forgotten that. Whenever you see them talking even about the current negotiations, one of their fundamental grievances is that the United States backed Saddam. I think if Jimmy Carter had been president, probably we would not have backed it. And if Saddam was carrying out chemical weapons attacks, the Reagan administration sat silently and sort of looked the other way. I don't think Jimmy Carter would have looked the other way. There was another thing that happened in 1982. That was the Israelis attacked Lebanon. And as Begin said at the time, it was a war of choice. It wasn't something they had to do. They thought they were going to resolve the problem on their northern border. It turned out to be a catastrophe in every possible way for the people living in Lebanon and all. The Reagan administration wasn't willing to intervene or do anything about that. I think that the Carter administration would have intervened very, very strongly, and my guess is that Begin might have decided this was not a good moment.
The history books tell us that Ronald Reagan ended the Cold War with his approach to Russia. Carter is remembered for his boycott of the Olympics, confronting the invasion of Afghanistan by the Soviet Union. What's your assessment of Jimmy Carter's confrontation of the Soviets in Afghanistan and beyond?
Carter shares in the blame about what happened in Afghanistan, in the sense that the United States supported the radical elements in Afghanistan. The Reagan administration continued that policy. And as we know, the result of that was
Al-Qaeda.
I mean, basically, it empowered a group of people who fought in the war, who were ultra-radical, and then after the war was over, had nothing better to do, and they were reformed into a terrorist organization.
So you believe Carter would have been just as enthusiastic about the freedom fighters and the Mujahideen as Ronald Reagan was?
Actually, he was the one that started that process. So
wow.
I can't say absolutely that he would have backed off. And Carter probably would agree that the freedom fighters, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, were successful in driving the Soviets out and ending that war. But I think he would probably agree that there was a very high price paid for that, and in retrospect would have real doubts about whether that ended up being a good idea.
What event and historical reality that we're dealing with today that may frustrate us do you think Carter might have prevented had he stayed around? Is it a style of dealing with the rest of the world? Is it an individual policy? What do you think?
Actually, Carter's individual style was both his strength and his weakness. He was basically an engineer. He He was a problem solver. And he went into something looking for a solution. And he thought everybody should share that view. He was not a great politician. He was not a schmoozer. He was not a backslapper. He was not somebody who was quickly say, okay, let's find an intermediate spot here. Let's split the difference and make the best of it. It was not his style. And a lot of people found him prissy and basically preachy. They didn't like that sense of direct purpose. On the other hand, the issues that he took on, which included climate change,
energy,
a lot of issues that we now see as extremely modern, contemporary issues, are ones that he actually started. He was a very modern president in the sense of looking at the issues. He was not the guy who could sway the leader of the Senate and sit down and have a bourbon with him and work out a deal where I'll give you this and you give me that. It was not his style. These long historical sweeps do have turning points. And curiously, looking back at it, and your question actually inspired me to think back about it, it's amazing how many of those turning points came right at that juncture in American politics and American foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, right at that moment, the second last couple of years of Jimmy Carter's presidency.
It is remarkable. Gary Sick, thank you so much for spending the time.
Real pleasure.
Gary Sick served on the National Security Council under Presidents Ford, Carter, and briefly under Reagan. He's now a senior research scholar at Columbia University. Before we go, a remembrance of something about the Carter years. It's pure Americana.
I'm square with the damn IRS.
So you don't owe them anything?
Don't owe them anything right now.
Till next year.
Till next year, that's right.
Recognize that voice? Jimmy's brother, Billy, who ran a gas station in Plains, Georgia. He made himself a global symbol of the American South.
You can either try to live a normal life like I did, or either lock yourself in a closet, which I would say try to live a normal life and the hell with the press.
Billy would say anything, was happy to pile on his brother. A beer was named after him, Billy Beer, and Billy had a piece of that. None of the Carters, though, had a piece of the TV sitcom Carter Country. It was a racially charged but mostly silly series based in a small town in Georgia where a city-educated black sergeant, Curtis Baker, has to deal with the ignorant, wacky racists who live and work in the town. Two seasons, 44 episodes. It was off the air by 1978. Probably couldn't get made today. But here's my favorite part. Carter Country's little town was Clinton Corners. We hope you've enjoyed this historical What If. Thanks so much for listening, and a happy birthday to Jimmy Carter, who turns 91 today. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.